digest and become great that we're going to do that. But I thought that we experienced yesterday something that I guess a lot of people need to experience, but we experienced something yesterday that gives us a lot of hope for the future. And I like with this experience that we had today to get an idea what happened in the course of developing relationships with the union and employers. In some courts, of course, we may be accused of things like selling out to the employers. In others, we may be accused of being hard to them. After 2 years of negotiations and an awful lot of disappointment, we met yesterday for an hour with the growers that are under contract. No more than now. And things that we couldn't do for 2 years with the health and welfare program were accomplished in about 45 minutes. And they were accomplished because after, well, many years now, 2-3 years with some of the employers, something very, I think very good has happened is that, see, we've come from a point of hostility and suspicion on both sides to a point where they now fully recognize and understand that the union is part of their operation. And after the meeting, some pictures were taken. Something great going on with the us and the employees. These are pictures, and there were three employees, 8-9 employees represented there, but three of them said that they couldn't see how they could operate without a union now. All of them, without any exception, I'm sure, will tell you if you probably not to tell anybody else, you know, that, that the relationships with us and them are very good. But what's very significant about the meeting was that we didn't come to a meeting, at least this last meeting, with the spirit of distrust or with the... We didn't come in as contenders, or we didn't come in as opponents. We came in to get a job done, to get the health and welfare program for workers underway, that fund is almost $7 million now. Both of us realize that this continual fighting over how it's going to be done, how and so forth is not going to get us any place. We both sit down and we didn't give up some of the things that we thought were very serious and we couldn't. And in a few weeks, I hope, as fast as we can get the program, the mechanics of the program working with you, the pay working, something else to do. I just want to say this because when you go back to the time when you were striking them, it was there at the present time that the people get short. Now what's really sad is that, see, the employers and the unions, have been in history, you know, have a way of accommodating themselves and making, establishing relationships after a while. But those on the outside will never accommodate that. And so what's going to happen is those people who are very much for us or very much for the employer, you know, will have to understand that the moment a contract is signed, sense that everybody's voted. And that the union, as well as the employer, wants to get along the money to adopt. So I don't know if we're delaying on that meeting. The Lenox City Council and Denison and Commerce are going to, I don't know what they're going to do once they get together with Jordan, and they will. They're going to continue a fight that has no, well, has actually no base, no basis. See, the company has noticed when they want to sign a contract with us, in almost every case. Those that came in to destroy the union are let go. Companies don't want it anymore. They were hired by the company to do a job on the union. The moment they sign a contract, it isn't the union wants to let them go, it's that the employer doesn't want. It becomes a liability, a very heavy liability. And for those who came in and did all the dirty work for the employer during the struggle, the moment they sign a contract, they're forced to go. What I'm saying is that in companies such as ours, you know, it's usually that third party that has to really understand what the company's all about. Otherwise, you may be carrying a banner that doesn't have any relation, you know, one from the company. So right now, I just thought we'd rather just. We're very happy that we're able to get this settled with the employer. And to bring it about, we have to do a little work on both sides. They have to go and get some of the employers who are very, really want to change their mind. And I have to go and get some of the workers and some of the other leaders who want to change their mind so we can bring about this negotiation. But it takes. Now, once we start talking with them, things change. They change, but they're not the same. Because they know that it's illustrated in every possible way that the union is just as much concerned about what happens in a branch in terms of keeping their grower going and keeping money, because they are. This is a job, there's no money, there's no job. And what is that there? They come to we have got the job. So, these things turn around mighty fast. Once we get to the agreement. Now, on this present conflict, an awful lot of people on both sides. Up to us to get both on our side to understand what is taking place. And I'm sure that the employers are going to have to go to their side and get those who are on their side to understand. I thought what I do maybe review some of the things that we have done. And then, if this video, please give me some time to ask questions, and I can answer some of your points and some of your questions that you have in your doubt, you know, or whatever it may be. I think it would be a lot better if I do it this way so I can respond to whatever you think. But the strike, it's going to be much, much stronger this year. So we have done much more organizing. So far, the green target has not been as much a problem as the black. We've been able to organize stations, for education, to hold many, many often for that long social march that some of our people The people on the other side responded very, very well. And I feel that no question, non-violence is probably one of the most significant things that people responded because they know the desert, they know the heat, and they know what it is to walk in that way, and to undergo that torture. And so the employers are now trying to break the strike. They're recruiting in all over the coast, not in Santa Barbara, Santa Maria, San Luis Obispo. They're recruiting up and down the valley. They're recruiting in Texas to run the strike. And at least for the time being, we don't know how long it's going to hold up. For the time being, they're not getting the thousands of workers across the border to come and get the strike. But that doesn't mean it's going to be like this always. It means that the first thing to the strike is what's happening. An awful lot of expense to us. We have about 20 organizers in Mexico working with us. We don't have any way of moving, but the funds have been very good. Consequently, the strike has been very effective. Judging by the amount of food that's being picked and packed, I think we have probably affected the production by about 60% at least. And last year on the 13th day of the chicken season last year, they had picked 79,000 bars. On the 13th day of the season this year, they brought in 33,000. And to find more and more people willing to go in the sector. Of course, this represents 3 years of solid work, trying to get those workers on our side, trying to get them to understand what we're doing, but even more important, kind of trying to make them go hungry so they can help us. It's the only way to do it. The question of going hungry, is they going to help the union? Because what people don't understand is that we don't have a strike fund. We have an organizing fund. When the growers and the opponents say that, working out in fields, sure they're out there. Now we had a fund, an unlimited fund. They wouldn't be working out there. If we could just provide the rent, utilities, and food and some of the real critical matters, they would be out there. But we haven't got that money. And so, plus the fact that we can't get the people out there, we want to be some of our people need that because we know what it's got in the past. We took out all the people at Champion to a pistol time. We took all the people out in the Georgia Rival, and we had a pistol time. So some of our people that could maybe try to keep working and organizing everything. But every time we get a worker to support the strike, in fact, we tell them that he's got to go hungry. And that's quite a bit. And we had a strike fund that says we just have enough money to keep the organization going. We had money to keep 1,000 workers on minimum strike benefits. I think you know that one. The other thing is that, and you know, of course, the other thing that makes part of this bill about it is that people should not be made to strike for recognition. Even the most backward countries in the world do not force workers to strike to get their position. I can see a strike on the council question of cutting a contract. Type of the worker company, we know the type of workers. There are very few countries that will permit this. All the backward countries of the world, including Latin America, the labor relations are very modern if you compare them to what's happening with us in the employers here in California. Extremely modern. This leads to the question of our stand on the legislation. So we lost some good friends. We expect it to be more if we continue to further statement. You can compare our struggle to the civil rights struggle in that there are if minority group people starving, striking, or struggling, they're poor, and it's a conflict. So what happened to them is going to happen to us. So we're doing this all of them very well during the initial part of their struggle. When legislation came, and they were demanding that kind of legislation that was going to help them do the job. The liberals in America said, no, you can only have this kind of legislation. And the drive, which is a very beautiful drive, disintegrated. And I don't have to tell you what's going on in the ghetto now. I don't have to tell you, this is where it came from. I've been talking about the National Relations Act for a long, long time. When the strike first started, with a limited amount of the law, we never could work under that law, we never... All of us in the union are not labor leaders, say, from other unions that we just started. And we thought that the National Relations Act was the best thing. But then we began to get questions from the membership from the boycotters and from people just joining the union. You may know, what about this, what about this, what about this? And it was a process of over 3 years where we were able to analyze the law and what it would do to it. And so we stated that if we're going to organize workers, then we need the tools to do it. And very many things that we're going to organize workers under the President National Labor Relations Act, the agreements are not. Because labor is totally not organizing work under that law. So if you look at the people who are being organized in labor unions today, they're being organized, the ones that are organizing effectively are those that are organizing outside the National Labor Relations Act. Those that are organizing effectively are those that are organizing under the presidential proclamation, Kennedy's proclamation to the employees, the government employees, the right to organize. But under the National Labor Relations Act, they're not even abreast of the workforce. What is happening is that it's become a real game. Become a game, became a factory in the election. The union with its people that wants to change the opinion that a lot of money they have a lot of their attorneys and so do the company. And they go through a legal process for 2-3 years on the board and determination. Now, for the organizing companies that all they already have a hold on and expanding, they're just trying to cover their company. I want to give you a regular example. In the South, or before that, they're also organizing where the employers are debt they are, they're not the same energy that the growers have or the employees in the South. I'll give you another idea. The textile workers in the South, under the first national election, that they won almost every election. Ideas. And we all know what those ideas are when they see no. We know that the only way that labor peace is going to come to the agriculture is, it doesn't really come. And even all you do is look at labor, the future of labor in this country and other countries. It doesn't come until the labor union is strong enough so that it's not, so it's recognized and so it's not afraid to be heard. And before that, it will never come. It doesn't come from this weekend. And all of the unions that started this country, you see, the big battles have been by the unions where to the point that they couldn't, the power wasn't balanced. But once the unions made it, being fully recognized that there was a part of the where to stay, and then it was continued. And then peace came and progress was made. With all the legislation being forced in California, you know, some real bad bills. They're not going to stop the concrete mortar. They're going to open up the doors for not a lot of violence to commit, not a lot of other things that we don't want to do, and we pledge not to do. But the idea of organization of farm workers to use is pretty expensive amongst the labor workers. There are a few workers who don't want the union. But each time those who don't want the union, you find out why they don't want the union. The same way that those who do not want the union to be industrial labor don't want it. It's a reason there. But by and large, the farm workers do want a union. Actually, they want a union because they know the union is going to bring better wages and better working conditions to their people. And they know that the business of their cousin or their uncle or their family that belongs to the carpenter's union or to the farmer's union or to the labor union, that's what they have to do. They know that. They know that the union is going to do it. And what I think is going to happen is that the struggle is going to accelerate. If there is enough damage to be done on both sides, that even if we settle today, you know, it's going to be a long time before it will never recuperate the losses. The losses of time and money and human suffering and misery on our side. And that's going to make it up. And the loss of faith, as you say, mentioned, don't you believe that they have a tremendous loss. Don't know what it is. There we go. We're not going to go away. No more than the mining went away, that it still happens. No more than the longshoremen, or no more than the other workers. The union did stay. It's going to struggle out in the open. Or it's going to drums and I learned to run and just play. The drummers criticized me, and it's quite a lot for my teaching of non-violence. And they said, it's not violence, but it's quiet, it's too soft, it's just a non-violence. And I speak of non-violence not because there's violence, but because the possibility of violence is always on the front. And they don't know what this particular boy, God, I think it's the strongest religion we've ever been. We have most of the main cities, the possibly one, maybe the most big cities. An awful lot of work has been done, and it's been a big impact. We have, in some areas, many supermarkets who are not selling great. But the important thing is not that. The important thing is that we have a lot of people who are not buying great. That's where our strength lies. And what is happening is, to give you an idea, see, we have our life in the strangest places. For instance, we know that the buyers are the strongest allies we have. If a buyer comes to Farmer Jones and he wants to buy a dragon, he's got so many beautiful arguments to buy it. He's given half the price at this point. For less, that's the variety of grapes, the early grapes in Coachella. Selling 2 years ago, in Coachella, the first one, for $16. 14. Well, the rate first is as much as $24. 18, 16, $14. That's how they make their money over there. It's the first grape in the market. The first few boxes were sold for $10 and then the price went down to $7.50. That's where it is now. And the moment the Arizona grape comes in, then that's the end of that market. I tell you, why would it be $7.50? See, the buyers, those of you who are in business and met buyers, you know, you'll know what I'm talking about. They use every image that they can to cut the price. What they're saying, what they're telling these buyers, and those who go to talk to some of these buyers, they say, well, look, I can sell the grape. I'm going to get the chance to do great. If people don't want it, I'll take it off your hands, but I can't see you. And that's the best ally we have. And we'll continue to have that ally. Simply because of the proper motive. And so, sure, it's a great, you know, sell. But they'll, they won't get the price. And they must get the price. Then in January 14th, I believe, I wrote a letter to the growers asking to meet with us. There's another reason that we talked about the pesticide issue. We told them that we wouldn't expect them to sign a contract, but we would expect them to implement some safeguards. And we also told them to be a secret meeting they wanted to, and it would not be publicized, but then it would, we had to do something about the corporation of poison. We became alarmed when we opened a clinic about 2 years ago to see how many cases of people working on the field are affected by this chemical poison. We began to follow and make a survey and began to really see what's happening. And they gave me an answer. There was a meeting. They didn't enter it. But there are a few boys to talk to, even though we're striking them. And there was a meeting for all the Georgia Service Centers to consider the letter that I had sent them. And there were a fair number of Georgians who wanted to meet. On the edge, there are a number of Georgians who'd like to meet with us right now. So he talked about intimidation, all the charges they face, you know, blame us, all the things that they say about us. They can be. Those persons who wanted to talk to him to speak out. There were a lot of doubts and things both down to fakes and little scenarios, other things and other things, but they did not give that minority within the group a chance to speak out and try to make them sense. And they put them down. And they're pretty vicious over there too. And we sent out a letter last week telling them that, let the public know about the poisoning of the grape. That's what you need to be in the grape. From all of the research that we've done and we've contacted the men that made the experts, they don't have to be people who grow the grapes. They don't. In fact, there are some places where you can band and they can continue to do it. But they won't meet with us because just the fact that we're union, maybe think that if they meet with us, they recognize them. So now, the whole issue of, we try to see the records in Bakersfield, as some of you know, from the county agricultural commissioner, and we were enjoined, or he was enjoined from showing us the records. We tried to get, we went to the pesticide applicators and tried to get information from them. The thing that we wanted more than anything was when was the field sprayed, so that insisting that they don't send people in before the number of days that are required, there's a danger period from the time they spray. 14 days, whatever it is, in some of the pesticides. This is the thing that we want. Also, to be able to tell the workers what kind of poison they're dealing with, they're coming in contact with. We couldn't get that. Then we tried it in some of the Riverside County, and we got exactly the same reaction. We tried it in Tulare County. So, about a couple of months ago, we sent the Rochella growers in the federal court in the state court trying to get an injunction in halting the use of DDT, and that the appeals will be coming out very soon. If you read the San Francisco Chronicle this morning, you should have an article there for the state Air Force Department or Commission met today, and there was among them. They were divided on the whole question of DDT and pesticides. I can't find no meaning of pesticides. I know just a little bit. We begin with learning. But we have people in the union who know much, much more. And it's very frightening. And we're not going to stand back and let them just go in the merry way and use the pesticides without being responsible for the workers and the consumers. See, for over 2 years, we didn't want to raise the issue. I didn't want to raise the issue. Because I have a fear of what it would do to the grapes. I have a fear of what it would do to the industry. And don't think that there was not enough pressure on me to make the movement with things. And we called the employers, we sent wires, sent letters, trying to get them to meet with us to solve this issue. And And well, we're asking the Brigham Memorial, we're just asking that the bridge be tested. That we're careful in what we do in terms of how we spray. And that, you know, that they don't spray the workers while they're in the field, and that's what they do. Over and over again. They don't get money, they don't spray right over. And it's a fact, and it's a truth. It's proven, it's documented, there's no question about it. And it does become a side issue, but a very important issue. And then we have the question of the support. Labor, I told the great friend, the labor knows the issue and appreciate that more than anyone else because everyone has gone through it. Or at least the leadership has. Most of the leadership is old. They were there in the good old days. They know exactly what we're going through. And they're supporting the strike by and by. Financially, they included maybe 90% of it. Then we have the liberals who supported the county. Very difficult in their minds of the army. There's so many good issues now. And then we have the students who have no money, have their own problems, but who are very consistent, you know, in being opposed to the power structure. Then we have the church. We have the, two extremes, you know, anything you think. We have the Catholic bishops on the right, I put them on the right, who haven't even really, not been willing to endorse a boycott as a group, although a few of them have. And we have the micro ministry on the left. They've given themselves and everything that they own, that they have, you know, to the struggle. Many in between, we have a lot of shades of support. We always considered, you know, that the church missed its bet, you know, when it became isolated from the labor movement. I don't know how it happened or why it happened, but I know that it's very isolated. And I know that because it's isolated, it's also isolated from the people. Well, at least those who don't come to church, but who are worshiping. And maybe some of those things that they criticize David for doing, maybe we can be criticizing the church for giving up its role in the whole field of ethics. The whole question of being consent for those who are in this area, you know, with us, those who are in need. See, the labor movement also has sort of separated itself from the poor. The poor are not organized in this country. That's why they're poor. And when you take East Los Angeles as an example, take East Los Angeles. Hundreds, thousands of people work in places where a labor union cannot organize them and service them because the union is very small. There's what, 2, 3, 1, 5, 6, 10 employees. A labor union that's structured but has to pay the best wages to its representatives and all of the benefits and all these things that have to take care of. It's impossible to service local or a unit with two workers or five workers, they couldn't. Financially, they couldn't do it. So they set up now. We find ourselves in the same, boat. We could tell a lot about a contractor's two or three workers at this point. It's a small grower. We feel that we get the largest. There's no reason to get the small ones. Really, you know. Anyway, the small ones follow the meat of the large ones. And the large ones are the taste of it. But I think what has happened is that the church, even importers, has confused the issue. It has looked at our issue as a labor, strictly a labor issue. That's how they're looking at it. And when they say labor issue, they say, they use the labor issue, the benchmark that they use is labor as a whole. And they don't think of this labor issue as an issue of poor people who, doesn't matter how well organized they are, don't limit them, we'll never have enough money to run our own operation with the needs that are they're always present. You know that a member in our union makes probably 300% more demands in this union than one big locus in this country. Take a plumber, he doesn't have, he's got money to take care of the medical needs, got money to take care of legal needs, got his money to take care of all of his needs. You take a farm worker, even under contract, with $1.92 an hour, they haven't got enough money to take care of their needs. They still have to come to the union, we still have to provide some kind of aid through our service center to help them deal with the public agency or the private agency. I'm not saying anything about who are not organized. So, some of the church groups have seen it, have given us their prayers, but they haven't really given us much more than that. When the union is built, the church cannot expect the workers to have any respect for it. It can't. Why should they respect the church? So this is what some of the countries that have gone through revolutions find out. Mexico, for example. The leadership in Mexico is fighting large anti-clerical. Find out how comfortable the church support their own side in the revolution. And in Italy, we have a country in France. Long distance across for 2 months. A few other countries. Seems to me that the church has to do for the poor are. Otherwise, how can it justify being a church? Or is it safe? It can't. Now, I'm not saying there's not a difficult church. That's the problem. The problem is that there are pressures on the other side. You're already free. Here, you know, in Leno, the church is pretty much, with some exceptions now, has abandoned them. They badmouth the union, but as much as the employers in some areas, in some cases. What do you think that the workers have to respect that those ministers who do it, those priests? No, they don't. Do you think that's the stop there? That's the stop there. The poor and the worker have a way of propagandizing among themselves. A very potent way. You know, they began to look at the church like government, like everything else. We think that the church has a lot to gain by associating itself with just causes. But I think it has an awful lot to gain by associating with the poet and by making fans. Especially in this day and age of confrontation and struggle. If we, you know, if we, for instance, take a look at the South and the ghetto, and we sit here and we wonder what all the violence is, and then we look, you know, and look at the footage, the long line. There were, you know, probably Montgomery and a few other victims in the ghetto. They're trying to save the church by appropriating money to these stories. I don't have to say it that way. The church, let's face it, you know, that fire this work is standing more in the poor when they're in struggle. Before they wake up and they're going to struggle. You know, but the poor are struggling. Look at the church, they're born aged. Unless, in those instances where the church is very much a part of the struggle. And well, of course, we couldn't even ask that everybody be with us, you know, because they just have time to do the work too. But I think they should be with us. The church is probably the only institution that can work both ends. But they're not doing it in any case. We think that this year the strike is going to be probably more intense than any other time. The workers are going to realize that we haven't got too much time left. Of course, my hope is that we'll be able to settle something before too long. Otherwise, it's going to disintegrate, I think, into an underground movement. I think of what may might happen. But keep moving together and not be able to win for almost 4 years, it won't be very. Yes.
I have two questions. One on this matter of pesticides. Aren't you able to get some answers from Hawaii where the unions are stronger? The second question I have is, you say you are hopeful for a settlement. Now, if you don't favor the National Labor Relations Board, and you certainly don't favor the Nixon proposal or the growers proposal, what is the basis of your optimism?
Well, your first question. See, in Hawaii, when they have not only a union for farm workers, but they have a very strong legislature that's oriented towards workers. What they have done is that they've made very, very sure that the workers are protected. It's not a question of setting rules and regulations. Those are already set. The question, the real issue is following those regulations. We have all kinds of rules in California throughout the country, but they're not followed. And so they don't know that they make sure they're followed. And so they have that problem solved.
As a matter of pesticide, how long after they need to wait? Questions like this, do you have the answers for yourselves?
Well, see, we don't have the answers for everything, but we do have the answers for some protection. When we know that we shouldn't go into the business rate of clarifying, we shouldn't be there some of the days. We know that. We know that what the symptoms are, and we know that at this deal is the business rate of clarifying. And we went there, waited the number of days required, and until somebody comes ill, immediately we know that if we had anything to say, we'd pull everybody out and give that man the proper attention. We have no say so. Now, on the question of legislation, we want to be covering the Lincoln Liberty Relations Act. It's proper. That's what we should be. But to apply the law, the now stands and now applies to the labor movement, which is organizing. I'm seeking now what the workers want and how they see it, and being very frank about organizing. We're not going to organize with the National Relations Act as amended by the Pep Hartley and by the Lemon Griffiths. See, we're going to be dealing in almost every case in right to work space. We don't have a chance. Quite after us in Texas. We couldn't even get the first space. What's up in Northern Arizona? You know they got an injunction on you can't take it? Basically, in other words, they can insult the union.
I think some of us are coming to see that. My real question is, recognizing this, what kind of settlement do you hope for?
I think that the proposal we made was that we should be covered under the Wagner Act, as the unions were covered in the beginning, where the government came to the no question about that. That's why the unions are organized. They are very old in industrial strife. All of the problems that we're doing, very great problems here, all you know, were averted because the government made a policy to stand by the workers and help them equalize power. Now, once the power was equalized, they came back and they took some of the power away from the union through the amendment. They destroyed the union. It could destroy them because they were already fixed. It equalized them. Now they come to us and they catch the part of the law and then they want to give us a few provisions that are good law and then a whole lot of provisions for the anti-union. The Jeff Hardy is a complete out and out anti-union law and so is an individual. We can't do the job. So I'm saying we're going to do the job then. We've got to have the same climate that the union set under the Wagner Act in order to do it. Well, give me an example. We run the national under the NRA as it stands now. We have a large number of doors and strikes. Each door would be a separate case. You know how much money we take no less than $1 million in legal fees in 3 or 4 or 5 years to untangle the
without any law at all. Something nothing gets. A lot of doors are now saying, you know, well, there's nowhere to settle. It's a strike without some kind of...
Oh, no.
Business pay machinery.
No, what they're saying, they're saying is, what they want anti-union legislation. They want to go even beyond the Pep Hartley and beyond the legislature. They want to have a non-strike clause in the contract. You don't do that in a free society. I don't care if it's teachers or apricots or automobiles. You don't want to bring peace between the workers and the employers, and you take the right to strike away from you. I'm not saying that I'm in favor of striking during harvest time. What I'm saying is that if they pass a law prohibiting us from striking, they take 90% of our bargaining power away from us. Now, when we're not confronted with the right to the whole question of striking, then we play that on the table as a negotiating item. And we use that all to negotiate. So we haven't, the relationship with the employees we have are fine. Every single thing we do has a non-strike clause. Every single one. But see, also we generally also have an all-out clause. Now, they enact legislation and take the right, our right to strike and boycott, then imagine what's going to happen. The organization is going to go on the ground, and the people are going to come.
Do you feel in some type of legislation or the ability to strike at harvest is not, this doesn't have to be, you don't have to have this in order to gain the end? All right?
True. See, most of the employers we have in the contract
when I spoke. And the contracts were fashioned so that they expire during the off-season. All of them do that. So that we have about 3 or 4 months of finance to argue and, negotiate and have it ready so that it doesn't appear to harvest.
But are you willing to give up your ability to strike at harvest before you have a contract?
No free man would be, no free union man would be in the world if you want to do that.
Why is it?
Why is it?
Yes.
Because that's a sacred to us, the right to go vote. It's sacred to me in the work.
Well, there's quite a bit of difference in the balance there.
No, there's no difference in the balance. You're dealing with a very powerful employer. You tell me, we've been striking for 3.5 years. How far have we gotten? We haven't destroyed the crop. We've picked every grade they have.
Well, this indicates that you couldn't sway the workers.
It indicates that the employers are not willing to deal with their workers. It indicates that we have refrained from bombing their places and burning them down. It indicates that we have had respect for the private property. It doesn't indicate.
Well, do you mean?
If we wanted to, we'd go out there and destroy their private property.
You mean, if you want a private argument, Cedar?
No, that's right. They can have a private argument.
There's some questions.
This is the same thing that I talked about, the Negro Civil Rights Movement. The devil comes in at the point where he thinks he's getting too much. And nothing left that oppressed people do the complete job so they can have a freedom that they need. Don't worry about the employees, they're not going to go broke. Worry about us to get on equal footing with them. That's what you should worry about if you want to see some kind of peace out of the field.
Well, I'm not in harvest, and I'm irrigating now, but I know that if I couldn't, my men weren't...
Oh, you're an employer?
Yes, I'm a farm employer.
That's where the argument should be.
Yes, you're right. This is where the argument actually the rope is come. But what I'm trying to say is that I know that on my farm, and I'm sure it'd be the same on most farms, that if I can't get the help I need at any time of the year, and at certain times it's very critical, but right now we're irrigating, and if we put off the irrigating for 2 or 3 weeks, we have a serious loss.
Yeah, well, you see, that right to be protected from our time and more. What about us? What about our work? What about poverty? What about all of the things that the employers have done to us as human beings? What about when they come?
You have the right to walk off the job any time.
You have the right.
Well, don't you?
You have the right to starve at the same time.
I'd ask a question.
Pardon me. I think you've just both agreed that the union should have the right to walk off the job. You just said it.
Right, I agree with that.
So they do have the right to strike.
Well, we have the right to meet with intelligent employers and work out an agreement. So that's what we're speaking of. We're not speaking beyond that. If an employer is not willing to let its workers have a union and forces them to strike in order to recognize a union, what kind of employer is it? 17 cents to get a call, even further back.
Some employers are saying they can't meet with you and work out a settlement without some kind of legislation. Matt Waller was saying, what is your reason for optimism? Besides the legislation, do you expect that there's going to be some litigation to go over?
Okay. See, they don't need legislation to do that. I would call and you would call everything he said in newspapers and now he's ready. In 1935, when we had the employer, it was the workers, or rather the drawers who prevented the workers from being covered under the National Labor Relations Act. It was a drawer lobby. And since then, they've opposed everything. Minimum wage, housing, child labor, everything is coming to oppose it. Now, it's late. They want legislation. They're not kidding anyone. They want to press the legislation. What they want is to take away our rights as citizens, as workers, to use that the only weapon we have. And that weapon is the right to strike in order to get employers to come to the table. But see, we say we have that as a reserve. We don't have to strike. If we have people who, employers who are modern, and they're, in the first place, they're very few know anything about labor relations, but see, you don't even have to get to the point of striking. You don't have to. What happens is that they don't want to come to the table. They will not seek work. Now, for instance, they're going to settle with us because at some point it's going to become more expensive to fight the union than to settle with the union.
At that point, you're unsettled. Isn't that sad? It's very sad. Very sad.
I read in the paper just quickly this morning about the Defense Department apparently shipping a great many grapes to South Vietnam. What's the validity of that newspaper article?
It's right. The government is taking up the slack. Our own government, under the Johnson administration, most under the Nixon administration, are buying grapes and sending them to Vietnam. They're doing it to stifle the boycotting. It's a direct, they're using the whole government to call out the workers. Then, just one step further. I don't know if you eat good cocktails, but you have a can laying around for the last, say, 2 years, open it and compare it to what you get in your store today. And an awful lot of grapes in this
cocktail. Count the grapes.
You mean now? They bought the grapes. They're bringing them now.
By what authority? Under legislation or the Constitution, does the Defense Department have to take this kind of side in a labor strike?
Well, you know, the military, there's a lot of things done, and what they're doing is... Interestingly enough, you know, the per capita consumption is something like 7-8 pounds per...
8 pounds per man.
You know what happened if you need 8 pounds of grapes? less than 1 pound.
Well, could I conclude then that the Defense Department and the Department of Agriculture are more willing to help South Vietnamese than American citizens?
They're more willing to help the employers, yes, and South Vietnamese. They're using South Vietnamese for other things other than
the figures are 555,000 pounds of grapes to Vietnam in all of fiscal year 68, and 2 million pounds in the first half of fiscal year 1969. The Defense Department guy says, this sentence is so beautiful, I can't
get
it. Department of Defense, this is from the Department of Defense, official statement. Department of Defense does not purchase grapes merely because they have been made more available and less expensive due to the effects of the boycott. Then they list other reasons besides that.
Well, those buyers, you know, maybe it's hard.
Like you say, they need to... I have another question. Are you aware of the request from, I think it was the American Farm or California Farmers Federation to make these pesticide records open to the public, make them public?
No, I haven't seen any requests.
Yeah, because, and the reason was, I think this was at their last annual conference, I'm sure it was, here in California. Held in Stockton, by the way. The reason that pesticide records are kept not made public, as I understand it, is through some statute on the agricultural law. And anyway, they want this statute removed. And I think it's good. But as an agriculture employer, I see no reason for it to remain secret.
No, that's the information we have from our attorneys is that they wouldn't let us see the records because we're afraid of the information.
No, I'm sure there's a law
that
it's not public information.
No, there's no law. The law on the books is the law that requires pesticide applicators to report when and what they apply in the public interest.
Right. And those records are open to the public interest except when the judge in Kern County makes a different law. So we have to go to the federal court to open. So you guys control all the policies. You're fighting my bar and getting a dying increase in wages. What we want is we want some of the power for us. We want the workers to have a right to determine their lives, you know, not only in the farm, but also in Sacramento and Washington.
Well, we as growers want the same rights, too.
We want the Democrats in this valley to be the Democrats, the real Democrats to get out of the party. That's what we want. We want to be just citizens. We'd rather have a bias. We don't technically stand and have a sense, you know.
They don't like the way you do it, then it's no good, huh? And we have other opinions, too.
Well, you see, you've had control. You've put those guys in office for so many years. We'd like to try it and see how it feels.
See, I'd like to go back to another question.
is the right to strike at harvest open to negotiate when you make a contract?
Oh, yes. That's
a different thing.
That's an important item.
Yeah.
See, that item is always, see, the employer always wants that. Mm-hmm. And we want other things. You go to negotiate, and you take away the power to strike, and the employer knows that by law we can't strike. You know where that puts us?
Yeah, himself.
Right. But you put that on the table, you know. Who put it on the table? You want that? Fine. You know, that's other things we want here.
Mm-hmm. Now, it is a fact that all of your contracts include no strike contract, no strike
clause, and no boycott. Every single contract.
Mm-hmm.
Every single contract.
Yeah, but in can't you see, Will, the power? Where is the power during this point of writing up the contract? If you can strike during the time I'm picking my grapes, trying to get my crop off, I've got to sign whatever you give me.
Look, we've been striking for almost 4 years. Where are we?
Well, that's what I said. If you had to...
You picked all the grapes. If you had the Department of Labor, the Department of Defense to sell the grapes, and you know
what? Come on, if you could persuade the workers that they should not work on my ranch during harvest,
that's not
I'm done.
Argument. That's not an argument.
Don't you
have... You've got so much power on your side that we see.
That's how much he doesn't recognize.
Look,
yeah,
what's happening is just that in any free society, you know who gets it first? The labor union. Take Hitler, Mussolini, Franco, they were the ones who got it first. They got the power once, they had the workers organized. They've got an awful lot of power. And before they organized, the employers have all the power. We just want capital.
The thing that you've got at your scale is the job and the money that you can give to the workers.
And the debts that we better meet the obligations on.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're a small grower then, that
yeah.
It's time that you get organized. Follow our example.
See?
You should get organized.
That's just about as easy to get organized as you have. You're having
it. If you want to,
We
were sold out by a big grower. Let me tell you the experience when they say. It was a real fix.
The
biggest grower in the county was the president of the bank, and he was also the one who signed the loans for the small farmers during the Depression, during the Roosevelt administration. He signed all the loans except ours. Then when we had to get out, he knew who bought the property, he did.
True enough, but I have debts outstanding. There are a few individuals that have bought ranches.
They kick you out, you guys up, the big growers. But you didn't get
no
land
for them.
So strange, I don't know where it all started.
This is part of the problem. The small grower doesn't have any complaint with the big grower, and he doesn't realize that the big growers are the ones that are swallowing them up all over the country. They intellectually, they say, yes, this happens on a gut level. It hasn't communicated yet.
Except there's maybe one or two groups who are really wise to it, and it makes it
dangerous. I get this all the time with growers, Gene. My fight isn't with the big ones. But if you look at the history, the economics of it, the big ones are involved in all the people that you have to borrow money from, and finally they're the ones who swallow you.
Well, the only thing that I can see and recognize for a fact is that the big growers are the ones who are, as you said, the taste better, they come up with a new innovation of raising better and bigger quality of crops and so forth, and coming up with some new machinery and things that they're able to do.
Well, all of you are not growers. The taxpayers, in California, spend millions of dollars to develop machines to throw us out of a job, and they throw you out of a job.
I, as an individual farmer, spend $1,000 developing machinery too. University of California does some, but they don't do a little, mighty little bit compared to the job.
Well, they do a lot more than they do for work, and they don't do anything for us. They haven't done anything for years. And we're now about at the point where we got to the search and freedom to show what the new government has done. If you tell us to control everything, that's a problem. You already spent it in your power struggle. And that's, you know, you're very vulnerable because you're being hit from the right side.
That's true. How about that?
Okay. Jesus got to go. How are you? Can you tell us something about...
of the dialogue. I'm going to ask you folks for the various parts.